Hi, this is Darcy Lowen, The Chainsaw, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Back to another rousing edition of the Sixth Sense Podcast. I'm joined in studios by Tim and his brother Richard. Gentlemen, what's going on?
51.
51?
51.
All right.
Yeah, it's not quite the same. It doesn't have the same ring as 50, nor does it have the same ring as 20, but still good nonetheless.
Good stuff. So let's get right into it. You guys went to the Puck Drop event yesterday. How was the experience?
It was great. I really enjoyed it. I haven't been to a fan fest type event in a while, but I thought it was really well organized, really well done. It kind of happened quicker than I thought it would. The used equipment sale turned out to be a real gem. It was interesting to see all the people who ordered the jerseys were kind of like the hardcore fans in the city, eh, Rich? Like they were certainly, I don't know.
Yeah, I was hoping there'd be more people, but I thought it was a pretty good turnout. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Any characters?
Oh.
Looking at the photo diary, the guy in the toga was fantastic.
Those were only the ones that I could really get a nice, you know, unobstructed shot at. The Sensquatch actually eluded me several times before I was able to track him down in the parking lot out of coincidence. But yeah, anytime you get all of the, really extremist fans in one area, it's going to be interesting.
If you had to estimate, like, what would you say the turnout was at?
Oh.
Couple thousand, maybe?
A couple thousand, I'd say, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah, one, two.
For like a cold Saturday in Canada. That's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, it was great. Jersey pickup went great. Everyone's happy. We're going to have some interviews later on relating to this event and some of the other stuff, right?
Yeah. We have Jeff Kyle, VP of Marketing from the Senators, coming on. And then we have Jacob Barrett.
Yep.
Responsible for the design itself. So that should be interesting, to say the least.
The man of a million thank yous.
Yes. But anyways, let's just get into what's happening right now with the Senators. Yesterday they announced 5 cuts. David Rumbat and Stefan DaCosta weren't amongst them, so kind of removed any drama that there might have been. So you have Mark Borowiecki, who's gone, Dogovins, Lehner, Hoffman, and Weirkoch. Nothing surprising.
Does anyone know if Dogman got claimed?
No, not to my knowledge, anyway.
I think he passed through, didn't he?
Yeah. But I mean, like, nobody's really going to claim a fourth liner PK guy, right? Like, everybody has those guys already on the roster. They think they have them in the system anyway. So that's not really that surprising, especially most teams are unscathed in terms of injuries right now.
Yeah, but he's still young. He's 23 years old, played on the Calder Cup winning team. You know, he could play in the NHL, I guess, in somewhat of a limited capacity, I guess, but...
Latvian flight risk.
Yeah, he did say his favorite hockey arena in the world was in Riga, didn't he? I'm pretty sure he did.
Yeah, no, he did when he was on our show last year, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice guy. I don't know. Like, watching him play in the preseason, he was a guy who kind of stood out as a guy who could be, you know.
He could be a potential call-up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, that's fair to say. He can skate. He has some kind of offensive skills, and he can PK.
Have you guys seen those videos, too, from the bingo run when he was doing all those raps about the chicken and he had that cane?
I have not seen that, but I need to now, I think.
Yeah, I think we need a new link in this write-up. But anyways, yeah, not too many surprises there. Is it Runblad?
It is.
Rune?
Yeah, I learned that the other day. It's a proper pronunciation. So after...
CBC taught us something.
Yeah, after berating Bob Cole and Gary Galley for that pronunciation, it turned out to be right, yeah.
That's the only thing he'll get right this year, I think, so we'll give him that one.
Mike Smith,
yeah. Thanks, Joe Bowen. Thanks for that.
Unbelievable. So the cuts aren't too surprising. We can expect to see some of these guys back up in the near future.
What do you think happens when these guys get healthy, though? Because Peter Regan said he might play in the opener, right?
Yep.
So
the conversation gets even more interesting at that point, I think. Who do you guys give the spot to?
Oh, I think DaCosta is going down now. That seems like the...
I think DaCosta is the odd man at this point.
Yeah, like I think that bum leg didn't help his cause, but...
He looks slightly more ill-adjusted to the NHL game than Mika. I think Mika's defensive skill and his vision and his hustle and his willingness to play physical will compensate quite well for any lack of offensive ability that he encounters in the early going of his NHL career. Now, you and I, Graham, actually got an interesting tweet calling our discussion about Mika last week as disgusting, our hate for him, our alleged hate.
Yeah, because anytime you say, I think I would send him back to Sweden, that, you know, you hate the guy.
like, I appreciate Vinny listening, but, you know, it's really important to not misconstrue what we were getting at. And I...
Well, that's not true, though. You hate Francis Lessard.
I do hate Francis Lessard. He's terrible. He's an idiot.
Yeah, but it, like, I don't know. How do you equate, like, personal distaste for a guy with, yeah, that's, you know... just a roster asked him. Like, that's my only point regarding Zibanejad. You said yourself last week you'd give him that nine-game window.
If he doesn't
perform respectively well, you'd return him.
Yeah.
What's the problem?
To me, that sounds like a fair shake, does it not? I mean...
Damn you for being rational, too.
Like... We don't hate the guy. We just want to see him produce better than the next obvious replacement for him, right?
Yeah, it's as simple as that. If he isn't producing offensively, you have other defensive-minded centers within the organization itself. You could take that roster spot, and then you're not burning a year off his entry-level contract. That's just smart asset management. That's not a distaste for a guy.
His energy and time would be best spent elsewhere, grooming himself for next year, right?
Like, it's exciting to watch him play and score big goals and big moments in the past week and a half, but I mean... It's the preseason. He's playing against crappy competition. Let's see what he can actually do in the regular season before we start getting, you know, way too excited. It's just prospect porn, right?
Yeah.
At this point?
Just like Nick Foligno in previous years.
Yeah, exactly. Or Bochanski.
Yep. Mark Stone this year.
But he has pedigree, right? Like, Zibanejad has the pedigree.
Yep.
And obviously some other media types are already jumping on the bandwagon. Who was it this morning you're saying predicted?
Oh,
Simmons, I think.
Steve Simmons?
Yeah,
he's an idiot, though.
Oh, you should have seen this article. I got a real bone to pick with this guy now.
Steve Simmons?
Oh, unbelievable. He was talking about how in the very bottom of his article where he has all those little tidbits, like those, you know, like the Sun bullet points. And one of his arguments, I'm not sure if you read this too, Richard, but he was saying that anything that happens, he was equating what happens on the ice and things that happen in society, i.e. you cannot body check someone as you're walking down the street, but you can on the rink. He then furthers his argument by saying that you can say certain things on the ice in hockey, but you can't say them, you know, in, you know, regular society. And to me, you know, some of the things that have been coming up in the NHL are basic, you know, human rights violations. And I'm not sure if Simmons has any concept of the idea of human rights being absolute. You know, you can't just call
someone...
It's like
that South Park episode, too. Like, I was watching that whole, like, Wayne Simmons thing last week. But did you ever see that South Park episode where you have, like, the motorcycle gang driving through the cities and then Cartman's calling these guys a bunch of fags? But he's not saying that they're homosexuals.
Yeah,
he's just like... It's just the term of the meaning fag has evolved over time. That was like the whole point of the South Park episode. So I don't know. I was kind of laughing at that. But yeah, no, I don't know. There's so many TVs in an arena these days that like almost every player has a camera on them at like some point, right?
You're not going to get away with anything.
No, there. And like in the NBA, Kobe Bryant was fined $100,000 for calling a ref a fag.
Yeah.
It's just unacceptable, especially when you're a player on the ice and the camera's on you.
Yeah, and we are very well versed in what parody allows you to do, right? This is not parody. And the other thing I hate, too, is people on the air on in respective media outlets being afraid to use the term that was actually described. I mean, it's going to come out in court. It's an actual word. It exists. I think that not saying it and addressing it in the media actually perpetuates, you know, just how offensive it can be, right?
And I think it magnified the whole Simmons banana throwing incident on the ice. Like, you kind of like let him off unscathed for what happened there. Just, I don't know.
He's going to get a mulligan because of his heritage? It's ridiculous.
I don't know. It kind of magnified it for me a bit. It's a touchy subject, but...
It is touchy, and obviously this can get debated and will be debated in, you know, classrooms and...
Some people are even raising the argument, though. Like, what if Sean Avery is gay? Then it's a truth. It's like, come on.
You know what, Sean? Even if anyone in the NHL is gay...
Derogatory. Completely derogatory.
And the numbers suggest that there probably are.
Oh, I'm sorry, there's going to be someone.
Yeah, like they're going to feel comfortable coming out now and saying, yeah, you know what, this offends me, this bothers me. You know, it's only going to make things worse. I mean, obviously Simmons is alluding to the fact that this isn't the first time this word has been heard or said on a rink in hockey. I mean, just...
But he denied it, did he not?
Oh.
He denied even saying it.
Yeah, I think he did at the beginning.
And then...
So he didn't remember what he said, and then he said, I didn't say it.
Yeah, in the heat of the moment, a lot of stuff gets said. But some kid on the Ottawa Valley Titans recently got suspended for uttering a racial slur during one of those junior games. And, you know, it's just ridiculous to me. This is one of the things that needs to go in hockey. We talk a lot about the dinosaur mentality.
Oh, it's like the anachronistic, yeah.
Yeah, like the the middle-aged white Ottawa Valley guy. some of those stereotypes that just are rampant across the country, whether it's, you know, North Battleford, Saskatchewan, or, you know, Prince Rupert, BC. There's just a whole, you know, community of idiocy that subscribes to the John Cherry, you know, xenophobic moron society that thinks that hockey's this inclusive game for only people who can tough it, and it doesn't have to abide by the rules and regulations that society places on it. And, you know, if you vote NDP, or if you vote Green, or if you drive a hybrid car, you can't be a part of it. It bothers the hell out of me. Obviously, if you can't already tell.
That was good. That was a nice little rant.
I'm glad you got that out.
Yeah.
Could be a fun car ride home with
politics.
You.
Politics on the podcast. Good.
Something we normally try to stay away from. But anyway, something that's easy for us and light.
Yes. So you wrote in the newspaper, the Ottawa Citizen.
I thought it was great. How often do I bring the newspaper?
No, very often.
Yeah. It's good material for us.
Not in a while since the Ottawa Sun stopped giving them away at bus stops.
I loved when they were doing that promo, and then a few months later, there was a big thing like, oh, you know, when Sun TV was launching, oh, our readership rates are through the roof. Well, yeah, it's because you've been giving them away at every public transit stop in Ottawa. Like, I needed to call the city to ask for a new black bin, just so I had somewhere to put them all.
Anyways, you brought in this paper, yep. And it had an article in particular that you wanted to touch upon. It was called 12 Questions Waiting for Answers. I'm not too sure who wrote it. Probably
Scanlon,
Gordon, I'd imagine?
Yeah, probably. It looked like a staff writer, but Scanlon's name isn't attached to it. He wrote the big feature there, which was an excellent read. Otherwise, I'm not quite too sure who wrote it. But anyways, I figured that we're three guys, and we've got some answers.
Astute.
Let's give it to
astute them. Observation.
Yeah, and just like Jacob referenced, you know, maybe we are just some crazy 12-year-olds in a room with an opinion.
But yeah, true.
But we'll let them know.
Good point. All right, question number one. Where will the goals come from?
Opposing teams.
They won't would have been a simple answer. It alludes to, underneath in the subtext, it says, apart from Jason Spezza, Milan Mikolic, and Daniel Alfredson, if they manage to stay healthy, who will put the puck in the net?
I think it's going to come down to the defense for them after that.
You think so?
You can hope with Nikki or Filatov, but if he doesn't produce, it's going to be the back end, I think.
Well, he sure as hell you weren't referring to Foligno there.
Oh, we only know he's good in the preseason. That's about it.
So, Bobby Butler's a name that's kind of come out recently. It seems like there's a lot of media pressure starting to develop upon Butler. And he's looking at the line combinations he's in practice the other day. He's not a guy who's going to start the season on a line with Jason Spezza. Is that cause for concern? Because he's, you know, he's one of those snipers who doesn't do much else away from the puck. So, is that a concern to you guys?
Well, I haven't seen him do anything in the preseason anyway. I don't know if he's going to score again.
Yeah, he's gone largely unscathed by criticism, eh? Like, he just kind of got under the radar.
He's got a good release, though. I don't know.
People are too distracted by all the rookies.
Yeah, but he reminds me of, like, a modern Bob Kadelski, right? Like, he stank. Yeah. But, like, when he's on a line with Yashin, get him the puck, fires it in.
If you've got a good shot, you'll find a way to put the puck in the net. Hopefully you have an adequate centerman to dish it to you.
The one alarming stat from that Boston game, their last one, 4 seconds on the power play. That's it.
Really?
Yeah. And you figure that would be a situation where a guy of that nature could thrive, but I don't know. Maybe he doesn't have Paul McLean's confidence. Maybe he wants one of those guys who can skate the 200 feet.
In what time? Is there a specified time? Otherwise, the Sarge can be banging at the door, too.
And Filatov, did you want to hit on him?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of... This Ottawa Senators team can best be described as a team full of question marks. I mean, will Erik Karlsson beat McIver's record this year? Is it going to happen?
I think it'll be next year.
Yeah? Yeah. But it is inevitable at this
inevitable
point.
It will happen. Yeah. At some point, for sure.
Will Mihalik put up another Cy Young season? We were talking about this in the car the other day, Rich. Is he going to go, what? Like, what?
24 goals and 3 assists, maybe? Takes the Cy Young home with him.
Start calling him Verlander.
I know. I'd be really happy if you put up Verlander numbers. Then we'd know where all the goals are going to come from.
Yeah.
It'd be easy.
Judging by the preseason, though, like based off the production levels that were exhibited by Colin Greening and Eric Condra, I'm not expecting either of those guys to like bounce back, have relatively productive seasons this year. I don't know.
Not to derail it too much, this conversation, but it's really hard.
It's only question one. We spent a lot of time on it.
It's hard with the preseason, too, right? Because, you know, you want to say, well, it's just the preseason. These guys are getting ready. They're getting their chemistry together. You know, maybe the guys that have a spot are a little bit more, you know, like, let's just work on my conditioning as opposed to, you know, I really got to bury this one here. Or I want to impress the coach. I guess everyone does. But, you know, we can either put a lot of stock into it or just say, preseason, whatever. 9 games. We'll see what happens then.
Question number two. Can goalie Craig Anderson handle the strain of playing 60 to 70 games behind a team with a young defense and forwards who can't score?
Justin Goldman told us no.
I think the citizen just answered their own question in number one and number two. Yeah, Justin Goldman said what, 52? Over under 52?
Yeah, and he said...
kind of seems appropriate.
And he said Anderson can sometimes get a little bit... derailed, I guess, is the proper word here. We'll go with that one.
If he can't communicate properly with his blue liners.
He's not getting necessary support. Yeah.
Yeah. Thoughts? 60 to 70 games at Anderson?
I think he can do 60.
You think so?
Yeah, no injuries. He should be good.
Yeah, that's a big one, though. No injuries. Does anyone know his injury track record? I guess he got kind of...
He had a knee problem last year, no? Or was it a hamstring?
He's tweaked something right now, hasn't he?
Yeah, but they haven't really disclosed what that is. Ooh. Just kind of suspicious.
Hopefully,
but he played really well in Boston, though. He played the full 60 minutes.
We got a hockey draft tonight. Maybe Ald will go earlier than I thought.
Question number three. Will the team's aging defense, Sergei Gonchar, Philip Kubo, Chris Phillips, rebound from a poor season? Or are they too far past their prime?
Okay,
I think many would argue that Philip Kubo never had a prime.
Well, let's break it down. First of all, will these players be better than they were last year? Is it possible for them to be any worse?
Kubo cannot be worse. Can he?
He's making a good go for it this preseason, eh? Even against these subpar teams, like these kind of like split squads they're playing?
Yeah. It's tough, though, because you have a couple new blue liners coming into the ranks, too. So there could be some growing pains if there are some new pairings, right? And like one of these guys could get hurt. Chris Phillips, I don't think, can be any worse than he was last season.
Oh, no.
So I'm hoping he has a bounce back season, but like Gonchar's
can't be worse.
You don't think so?
No.
His offensive totals are subpar, but I think the rest of his game could get worse.
He's looked decent in preseason. He seems to have kind of got
it
together.
He's been a good first pass guy. Like it's when the opposition's coming the other way with the puck that I get a little bit nervous.
Yeah, you bring up the first pass, it's time to go on to the next question.
That's the Wade Redden thing, right?
Wade Redden story.
Yeah, the phone line's just lit up, and we don't even have a call-in show.
All right, next question. Will young defenders rise to the occasion? We know Erik Karlsson can play offense. Can he learn to guard the net? Will Jared Cowan emerge as the new Chris Phillips, a solid stay-at-home defenseman? I hope Jared Cowan's ceiling's a little bit higher than Chris Phillips, no?
I'm just going to say, my fingers are crossed here. He's looked like, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but he's looked like the best all-around defender we've had in camp.
I think Cowan's going to be a stud as well. I think he'll put up more points than people expect him to.
I feel like watching his offensive game in the preseason, I know it doesn't really count for much, but I feel like that's been a massively understated part of his game.
I agree.
Filatov to Cowan. It's the natural one, too. That's where our goals are going to come from,
yeah,
right?
There you go. There you go. Erik Karlsson counted to clear the front of the net, though? Like, has that ever happened? We don't count on that guy for that.
It's not his game.
He's just he plays solid positionally. Worry about the rest later.
Yep, that's Matt Kirchner's job. That's Brian Lee's job.
If Matt Kirchner makes it. All right, so now we move from young defenseman to what about young forwards? Can Bobby Butler duplicate his combined 32 goals at the AHL-NHL level in a full NHL season? Well, if he goes to bingo, I'd imagine he could put him more than 32.
Playing on a line with Corey Locke, absolutely.
The phenom, Corey Locke.
Oh, I'm so sad. Corey Locke fest is over now. Bingo started up. They lost bad last night, too.
Okay, so we've done the over-under bar on Craig Anderson playing 52 games. What would you slot Bobby Butler for in terms of goal production this season?
20-plus.
20-plus?
20 is the over-under.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to go with minimum 15 goals and... realistically, probably around there, but it would not surprise me to see him put in 20 to 25 goals at all either. That's entirely within the realm of his potential and his abilities. He obviously showed great chemistry with Jason Spezza last year, and he's got some nice hands. We've talked about that Hal Gill goal a couple times. The kid can play, and I kind of see him being the guy who's going to score all of his goals in bunches. Like, he's going to have a bunch of multi-goal games, and then this be invisible. And I also think he's a good doghouse candidate for Paul MacLean, early forerunner.
Yeah, no, that's a fair sentiment. Fair sentiment for sure.
I hope there's a doghouse question here later too.
Will this be Daniel Alfredson's last season?
No.
No, that's bold.
I think he's going to play the last year. It's only, what, $1 million salary?
Yeah.
I think he'll be there.
Yeah.
He's committed to the team.
I don't think it's going to be his decision. I think the decision will be made for him through injuries.
My own personal follow-up question to their question. How big of an issue will Daniel Alfredson look for a trade this season become?
Oh.
How big will that story be this year?
I think he'll say, I'm not looking for a trade, and it'll be over with.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He'll snuff it out right away?
I hope so.
Who would really want Daniel Alfredson at this point? I mean, to be honest with you.
I feel like 29 teams would want him.
Dude. They rolled the dice on Alex Kovalev last year in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's right.
If you can still demonstrate that he can play at a reasonable level, even if it's like, maybe it's not a point per game like it used to be for the past like four seasons, but if that guy comes close to like maybe like half a point a game to 0.75 points per game, you'll have a lineup of teams looking for a guy like that. And he's pretty cheap, right? Like
he's still four, a 50 point.
4 million? Yeah. No, 50 to 60 points if he's healthy would be unbelievable.
Yes. But look at the return we got on, or not we, look at the return the Senators got on Kovalev as well. Right? Seventh round pick?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, but he sucks.
Yeah, he is shit. But is it really worth it, to flip Alfie? I mean, we probably should have asked Jeff Kyle this. Would it have been, how much of a PR disaster would it be to flip Alfie for like a sixth round pick or a fifth round pick or something? I mean, how much did Sundin fetch? Do you remember when he went to Vancouver? That was a disaster.
That was a free agency.
Yeah, he just signed there, I think.
Oh, really?
He wouldn't waive. He wouldn't waive his no trade clause.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. The Muskoka 5.
Yeah.
I love when they screw over the Leafs like that.
Will Jason Spezza finally emerge as a complete player? He's kind of been stigmatized as a non-complete player for a number of years now.
Yeah, I think he played all right last year in all three zones.
I think you know what you're getting with Spezza. Just accept it at this point. I mean, he's going to put up the points. Who cares what else he does?
But I think he's made a concerted effort to get better in that kind of respect of his game. Like, he's winning faceoffs now. When he first came in the league, he wasn't particularly strong in that department. He's reverted his game. Looking at some of the numbers that Corey Clouston used him in last year, he was taking, I think, like the most defensive zone faceoffs. Like, he was counted upon for that. So,
yeah, I don't think Jason Spezza is the kind of guy who's ever going to be the absolute elite top-tier player in the NHL. We kind of expected from him based on his success in junior and kind of the hype that he received.
I put him in that same category as guys like Brad Richards or like a Mark Savard, like very good centers, but like
a game changer, an impact player, a franchise player, but maybe not the elite guy that, you know, he's kind of been expected to be. And like you said, Rich, like he's a very good player. We know what we're going to get from him. He will make people around him better, but yeah.
It looks like he wants to get better, which is important too, right?
Well, they gave him the A as well, so
yeah.
See if that changes him at all.
Yep, point of game player for sure, if he's healthy.
Next question. Will the team's middle tier players, Peter Regan, Nick Foligno, Brian Lee. Brian Lee made it to the middle tier?
If that's our middle tier, we're in trouble.
I was going to say.
I'm surprised Mahalik's not in that list.
No
Stop being passengers and begin to make substantial contributions.
Passengers, that's a great way to describe some of these players, eh?
Nick Foligno? He's just there. Yeah, I think Nick Foligno has just always been miscast as like a top six forward.
I thought we got rid of the passengers last year. I thought we dished them all away to other teams.
Astute comment.
Would Nick Foligno still be in the NHL if it were not for his last name?
Yeah.
Like, think he'd still be getting this
he
shot?
He puts up, what, like 15 goals a season kind of thing? 33 points?
Maybe it's because of his dad.
Goals.
Yeah. I'm not a big Foligno fan personally, right? You guys know that. I don't think he has the hands.
For the last 2 years, every offseason, you and I talk about how this guy's the perfect trade candidate to try and bring back some of the higher offensive ceiling.
Yep. And we've talked about how he might look good on a team like Vancouver, actually.
And maybe a team like Phoenix would want him, too.
Yep. Well, Phoenix, eh? They've got some interesting names. Anyways.
Can Mika Zibanejad carry his preseason success into the regular season? You've kind of already hit on this.
Yeah. We hope.
Well, yeah, you hope.
If he's scoring one out of every three games,
well,
it's not bad.
You hope he carries it over, because if he doesn't, you just wasted a year off his entry-level deal.
No, I just think he could be a Cy Young candidate, Mika. I could see him. He hasn't.
Well, what is he, 3-0 already in the preseason?
Yeah.
Off to a good start.
He had a win taken away from him as well.
Oh, that's true, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
That was a terrible call.
Yep.
I agree.
Number 10, will Nikita Filatov fulfill GM Brian Murray's draft day gamble and be an effective scorer the scouts predicted when Columbus chose him sixth overall in 2008? I was at the last game against Toronto, And one of the things I noticed when he was playing on Spezza's line is that his goal-scoring touch might be overrated. He strikes me as more of a playmaker.
More of a passer.
Yeah, he looks mislabeled as a sniper.
He's got excellent speed.
Yeah.
And the ability to find open ice, like to move into space, that's kind of a soccer or football term, I guess, but he really does move into open space quite well, and he sees the ice well. I guess that's part of the whole hockey IQ thing, right? And, yeah, I wonder if he's just a really, like a Jason Spezza almost.
A poor man Spezza.
There's nothing wrong with that, right?
You're just saying that because he's Russian.
Xenophobia.
Everyone, all of you.
I know.
There's a big red scare in Ottawa, eh? That's why they went with the black jerseys. Scared of...
There's a hint of red in them.
Just enough to keep people guessing.
Oh, man. Okay.
Next one.
Number 11. How much patience will fans show when a younger team hits its first losing skid? Isn't it expected?
Yeah.
The whole season to be a losing skid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm patient.
People, look how much we enjoyed the end of last season when we were bottoming out and everyone was so excited about the draft.
Don't you lose your patience with vets? So, you know, if you know the young future is coming up through the system, won't it be rewarded in the end? Isn't it like more reassuring that you know it will be rewarded at some point?
As long as the young kids are playing well, and we've heard this from a lot of people that we've spoken to, all of our friends, whenever we're talking about it, everyone agrees that this is going to be an exciting season of hockey, even though we're going to be garbage, right? And I think people will have a lot more patience if, you know, there at least is a light at the end of the tunnel, whereas last year there wasn't exactly that light shining bright, was there?
We got Mika out of it.
You have to be a believer.
Yeah, and if you get another like top five selection this year.
Yep, it could expedite it. And I got a question for you guys. When is this rebuild going to be over? How do we know when it's over? Like, do we draft well next year in the 2012 draft and then say, okay, now we just develop these guys. We only have so many roster spots. We're going to go for it. How does that happen?
Doesn't it end once your players stop progressing? Like your young players? Like once their development kind of stagnates?
Yeah. Kind of like, so what? 10 years?
Well, no, like, I don't know. You're constantly retooling. I don't know in the new NHL whether or not you can effectively ever stop rebuilding because you have to turf guys on such a regular basis just to keep your core together or decide whether or not that's a core to like build forward with, right?
Yep, absolutely. But the problem is that there's only so many draft picks to go around every year, right?
Yeah.
So inevitably, some teams that are, you know, what you'd call haves.
So maybe like the question should be, when do you go for it in terms of, and instead of like peddling assets to get more future assets, when you actually start making moves to benefit your roster now, right? That's your question.
When your team shows the ability to compete with the best teams in the league.
Yeah.
I don't even think you need to put any more stipulations on it than that. The ability to finish in the top eight in your conference and the ability to be able to compete. That's about it.
That's what the Oilers are going through right now as well. Like they got all their players and now they really need to win. Like they've been rebuilding for too long.
That game against the Canucks last night, they were getting pushed around real bad.
Oh, was it rough?
Oh, Taylor Hall, he was just getting, you know, passed around like, never mind.
It's interesting. It'd be interesting to parallel Edmonton's like draft record with what Ottawa has kind of done of late. Like I was having a conversation, I don't know if it was with you last week or not, but we were talking about how if you draft young defensemen first, it takes longer for these guys to develop. And then when your team is still bad and these young defensemen are developing, you get those good forwards in the latter stages of your development wherein they hopefully will fast track and kind of develop once your young defensemen have kind of matured, right?
Yeah.
So you get that kind of like melting pot of awesomeness.
Sure.
Like Chicago, right? Like they did that for years where they had Barker, Seabrook, Keith.
It's a fun team to watch.
Yeah.
Even Cheveldey
recently
was talking about, Shifley. I just went up Cassie Campbell, Pascal, by pronouncing that properly. She really butchered that one on Hockeyville. Anyways.
I feel like she butchers CBC anyway. Oh. That's another story.
Yeah, she's not the best, is she? He was talking about Shifley, Cheveldey was, and he said when you're building a hockey team, you want to build from the back out and then down the middle. And I think that's the proper way to do it. I agree. The Senators have clearly, are buying into this philosophy as well. I guess it's not a closely guarded secret. The back end looks to be interesting. It has potential, I guess. I'm not ready to write off a lot of these guys yet. Weerkosh has been a popular whipping boy online.
I'm
not ready to write him off. People say Rundblad isn't ready to go. Others say just let him ride through his deficiencies in the NHL. Maybe, sure. I won't write the guy off. He's a defenseman. He's going to take his lumps. Borowiecki looks awesome.
Yeah.
Everyone loves him.
A local boy.
Kanata boy. Bruiser.
At first, I wasn't sure if that was like the local angle playing itself up and like building itself into a bigger story than his actual talent level was. But you watch that guy in the preseason, he actually looks... He looks like what Eric Greiba should have been, I think, like this season, right?
Yeah.
But... Again, people look at that guy and they lump him into the conversation with Weerkosh saying, oh, he passed Weerkosh on the development chart. It's like, well, they're completely different players. So how can you even say that fairly, right?
I hate the notion of, leapfrogging people on a development chart. Like we talked about before, development is not linear.
You mean like leapfrog them in the rankings for who's getting called up first? Because that's completely like...
Oh, yeah. Everyone knows that if Chris Neal goes down, it's all of a sudden the next best player on the depth chart to go, right? It's like the BCS. That's how it works. So what if a tough guy goes down? You call up, someone with good speed and good hands, right? That's the way teams are built. Stupid.
Final question for you guys. What will constitute a successful season in Ottawa?
Nail.
Nailed it.
Nail, I believe.
Nailed it.
Bad pun.
Yeah, that kid's a freak.
If I use it another time, third time, will it be a good pun?
Give it one more shot.
Yeah. One of the Sarnia kids, I think. I'm not even going to try the other guy's name. Forrester.
Galchenyuk?
Sure.
Sounds Galchenyuk? Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
He's a Russian-American center.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. That's going to be scary. What a problem that is. When did this happen in Ottawa? When did we become so fearful? We've never even had like a serious like Radulov incident recently. Like, I understand Nashville being weary.
It's
of
those
Russians.
Standards though. It's the Ilya Zubov, Alexander Nikulin.
Yeah,
but like Volchenkov worked out so well for us.
I find Russians taken early in the draft, anyways. Like usually like top five picks, they usually pan out. I guess Filatov would be the exception, right? But
yeah, like I love these guys who are saying,
we should have, I suppose.
Yeah, we shouldn't draft or Filatov.
You're late to Richard's party.
Yeah, I'm lucky I was even invited.
Didn't quite nail that one.
Oh, again, another slap in the face. That's what I get for throwing Brooks Lake at you. I don't remember what I was going to say.
You're talking about Russians. Why we're afraid of them?
No, I'm not. I'm done with that.
Okay.
So everyone, your impressions on the third jersey once and for all.
Well, you guys own them. I haven't bought one yet, but
thumbs up.
Yeah.
Amazing. Best jerseys I have, I think.
Yep.
My favorite for sure.
Yeah. Well, I don't like the regular. I don't like the home and aways anyway, so.
Where do they rank overall in the NHL with you guys?
Upper half.
Top three.
Yeah. I definitely give them.
Philly and Chicago.
Oh, I always love the original six.
Yep.
They're all up there. But, yeah, no, it's nice that it's such a nice design. It's nice to have something local.
It's nice to have
you can actually be excited about.
Something to be proud of, too.
No, exactly.
Like, it's nice to not be,
embarrassed by what you're wearing.
Yeah, exactly. Or to go out and buy the stuff and just be like, oh, I know this is, god-awful, but it's my team. I'll wear it, right?
Yeah. All right, guys, so we've been talking a fair bit about these 12 questions that the Ottawa Citizen had laid out for us, and we... Took our sweet time.
It's fun getting interviewed once in a while, eh?
Yeah, it's fun. Anyways, I think it's probably that time where we should get to our first guest.
Absolutely.
Joining us on the line when we get back is the VP of Marketing for the Senators, Jeff Kyle. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back, listeners. We are joined by Jeff Kyle, the VP of Marketing for the Ottawa Senators. Jeff, big weekend for you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Yeah, off to a good start and looking forward to the next few days as we lead up to opening night.
So I was fortunate enough to attend the puck drop event yesterday, which I thought went fantastically. How would you evaluate the event and what kind of response have you got from the fans?
I think we've had a great response all around, not just obviously from the fans, that's really important, but a lot of good response from our players as well. And as I think we said earlier, I think we got a real winner on our hands here.
How was the response to the jerseys itself, though, Jeff, in terms of what you've heard from your season ticket holders, from your players? How was the response, man?
It's been great, and I think people really appreciate us tying back to the early Senators teams. And ensuring that the jersey really reflects those teams and tells a story. So it's more than just introducing a jersey. It's about telling a story of successful Senators teams of the early era.
Now, how bothered were you by the internet leak that appeared a few weeks ago on Aesthetics?
You know, you go into these knowing in today's electronic world that that. Probably at some point something's going to get out there, and so the fact that it got out there, yeah, it's somewhat disappointing. But at the same time, it doesn't detract from the fact that we think we've got a great jersey, and I think it both the sales and the response tell us that so far.
Jeff, this new jersey, would you characterize it and say that it's part of like a new brand for the Ottawa Senators? If you had to describe the Senators brand right now, how would you describe it?
It's not really a new brand. We've been using the O since we introduced the current home and away jerseys as a shoulder patch. And actually, in terms of merchandise sales, we've been selling a lot of merchandise with the O. We wanted to wait for the right opportunity to really take it to the next level, so to speak, with a complete jersey and tell the full story. And part of the reason why we wanted to do it this year is the fact that we're hosting the All-Star game. And we want to make sure that the people who are visiting for All-Star really understand the story of the early Senators and our connection to both the NHL and the game of hockey.
All right. Now, speaking of finances, I'm a little curious about this. How significant is the revenue stream created from the launch of a new jersey?
It's really significant for us. So it'll really make our year merchandise-wise. Certainly the jerseys that we sell at Scotiabank Place and our Send store locations at Place d'Orleans and Carlingwood really help the team's bottom line, because all the profits from those jerseys go to us as a team, whereas other retailers that will sell the jersey who buy from Reebok, all those revenues are split up 1/30th. So we'll get a fraction of the proceeds from sales through other retailers versus our own. That's why the exclusive period that we have of the first 11 days is really important to us.
I wanted to ask you about the transition from about midway through last season, before some of the more significant veteran trades were made with the Senators, and kind of the embracing of a youth movement and a rebuild. How do you, as the VP of Marketing, go about trying to sell the idea of hope and youthful energy in the system?
Well, we went about it back in January just wanting to make sure that we communicated to our fans everything that was happening. So we made a real conscious effort that whenever there was a trade take place or anything that was happening with respect to the Binghamton Senators or prospects that we had elsewhere, like a Jared Cowan, that we were keeping our fans informed about our future and about the change itself. And I think our owner said that, we've got such educated hockey fans that we're not going to fool them with respect to the change that's underway right now. But as long as we keep them informed and tell them exactly what we're doing, then they'll be the judges. And I think what we've seen as the transitions happen from January through to now is that our fans are excited about the change. They're excited about the new faces, and they know we've got enough depth, both because of the success we had in Binghamton, but the great draft that we had, that the new faces will start to perform, and we're kind of back to where we were, 5-10 years ago in terms of having new guys introduced to the lineup each year that start to really contribute and help the team improve.
Tim and I have noticed over the past number of months, and even going back maybe a couple of years, that the social media policy of the Senators has evolved and developed, and I guess even the Jacob Barrett jersey design is a testament to the power of the internet. Could you speak a little as to the social media policy of the Ottawa Senators and how you've kind of evolved as an organization?
Yeah, I mean, we've all had to change because of social media and, you know, terms of embracing it and working with it. And so we've definitely had a focus, and certainly we're learning as things change. So, you know, at times you're not perfect, but sometimes you have to admit that and just move forward and you know, try and work with the people. And I think that's one of the things that we're trying to do more of this year, is certainly work with the different bloggers, different sites, in terms of helping them in terms of access and you know, what we're doing, and just trying to realize that it's just another channel for us to communicate with our fans, and in some cases it's actually better, because it allows us to more directly communicate with our fans than maybe some of the traditional media.
Now, just how far-ranging is the reach of social media and the internet for Senators fans? We have a really hard time grasping it ourselves. Some days it feels like a really small community, and other days it feels like it's the entire city who's looking at websites. How do you evaluate that?
We're tracking everything from the number of people on Twitter to obviously Facebook likes that we're getting, the, you know, even stuff that we post in terms of how engaged fans are with it, and making sure that we're responsive and putting the stuff up that they're interested in. So for us, you know, we've probably in the last 3 or 4 years gone from no team of people working on it to about 3 or 4 people working on it. And, you know, the other big piece of it for us is Sens TV. So we've started to look at ourselves we're part of the media almost, and that we have to cover our team and give our fans access to inside information and video that's unique, so that we're presenting the team to our fans in the most positive light possible.
What was the motivation behind launching Senate Reform, the television program? I thought it was absolutely fantastic, and I assume it was widely watched by the Senators fans. But what was the motivation for it?
Back to just keeping our fans informed of the change and the transition that was taking place. Our hockey department, when we went to them and pitched them the idea of giving our fans an inside, behind-the-scenes look of what happens leading up to the draft, everything from player interviews to scouting meetings, they were really good. They embraced it. They allowed us to come in and shoot everything. We did have to show them the final product so that they could see it and make sure that we weren't positioning either any of the scouts or any of the prospects in a potentially negative light. But it was such a big success, actually. When we got stats from the league really does a lot of drilling down in terms of looking at video starts, that we had in June, we had the third largest increase in video starts of any team in the league, behind only the Vancouver Canucks and the Boston Bruins, which you would expect. Obviously, they were in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah, that's interesting. Jeff, I wanted to talk to you about this season in contrast to next season. Obviously, you do have a lot of overwhelming things taking place this season. You have your jersey release, a number of special events commemorating the 20th anniversary. You have the All-Star Game. Are you worried that next year might be a little bit of a hangover, or do you find that as a personal challenge to say, all right, we've carried this momentum forward, let's just keep going and go from there?
Yeah, I think that there's always pieces of momentum that you can find, and that's, you know, we've been fortunate this year with the ones that you just talked about that we'll be able to leverage and create interest and excitement. But I think there'll be new ones, and some may surprise us next year in terms of what they are. Certainly the new faces on the team itself, I think, is a big level, a big interest for our fans. So you know, we'll certainly look at that. But I think the one thing I've noticed over the past 20 years is just how much our fan base has matured. And, you know, probably 10 years ago, this transition, we would have had a lot more difficult time going through it. But I've been really impressed with the attitude that the fans have had through it. And I think that it bodes well for us for the next few years.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think that it almost makes me nostalgic for the original building of the current Senators. So in that respect, it's fantastic. But I got to ask you, it's kind of an elephant in the room. How difficult is it going to be when Daniel Alfredson retires eventually for the marketing department? How hard is it going to be to come up with that new franchise face to market around the league and to the citizens of Ottawa?
I think you guys know we'll never replace Alfie. He's got such a special place in the hearts of our fans and has done so much for the franchise that he's the type of player you can't replace. Having said that, we've got a lot of other guys that are appeal to the fans. We know Spetses, obviously, young guys like Carlson, Chris Neal, and they all have a different appeal for a different reason. I think that's the one good thing about being in a hockey market is that the fans just love the game and love the players, and I'm sure Alfie will always have a special place in people's hearts when he does decide to retire, but as a franchise, I think we'll still be ready to that we can still move forward.
And Jeff, before we let you go, I was just wondering, do you have any special planned events or maybe teases that you could share with us that are coming up in the next little bit for you?
Well, our big one we're focused on now is opening week. Obviously, we've got on the 11th, we've got currently 14 players from the 92-93 team that are coming back. Guys like Mike Peluso, Bob Kadelski, who scored the first hat trick of the modern era, Neil Brady, who scored the first goal against Montreal, a number of other guys. So with that, we've got a luncheon planned at the Prescott Hotel. The afternoon of the 11th, we've got Bruce Firestone coming out, Rod Brydon, Randy Sexton, other people who've helped us along the way to just welcome back the members of the 92-93 team. Other events that night, we're going to do a red carpet event before the game where we have both the 92-93 players and our current team introduced and walk the red carpet for our fans before the game. Then we have a dinner planned that night. And then the two nights later, obviously, we have the first game that will wear the Heritage uniform, and we're fortunate to have Frank Nyber's family will join us that night, and his son Pat will drop the puck that night. And that's the great part about the looking back at the Heritage as well as the teams is just the player stories of some of those players. And he was one in particular when we looked at it and did the research with Paul Kitchen, who was helpful to us. The fact that he was the first NHL player to win the Hart Trophy and the first to win the Lady Byng Trophy, there's a lot of those great stories that we want to tell this year as well.
Fantastic. I'll be looking forward to it.
Absolutely. And Jeff, I really want to thank you. I think a lot of the Sens fans are very appreciative of the events that have already happened this season, and we look forward to even more fantastic events throughout the year.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for taking the time to come on the show today.
You're welcome.
All right, so we don't have a lot of time in between interviews, so how about we get straight to Jacob Barrett, the man responsible for designing the new Heritage sweater. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, listeners, thanks for sticking with us. We're joined on the line right now by Jacob Barrett from Le Collectif Design. Jacob, how are you?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm doing well, thanks.
I can't believe you introduced him by that.
I tried. I tried the Francophone way.
The man is famous for the Ottawa Senators Heritage jersey today. Your face has been plastered all over the newspapers, all over the internet. This must have been quite the weekend for you. How are you, holding out?
It's pretty cool. It was a long week. There was a lot of work that went behind the launch. And I'm not by myself in particular, but by the whole marketing team. But there was some stuff that I needed to be ready for and get ready for. But it all culminated yesterday when I saw the guy stepping out on the ice wearing a jersey. So it was pretty cool. It's a pretty cool weekend, but right now it's just back to work. There's more stuff to do. I'm trying to push more my personal brand into pro sports design. So it's right back to work for me, really.
Wow, that's interesting. We didn't realize that you were going to keep going with the pro sports angle. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, it's nothing that, you know, I don't have anything of substance just as of now, but I'm definitely putting my irons in the fire, hoping that something comes out of it.
Well, it's a good time right now. I guess if Ottawa does, in fact, end up with the AAA Yankees franchise as rumored, or if and when the CFL comes back, it might be an all right time to be a graphic designer in the sports business in Ottawa.
For sure. I think it's an interesting time for and a fun time for sports fans in Ottawa. Not only those two franchises you mentioned, but with the Ottawa Fury taking the place of the Montreal Impact in the NASL. That's another pretty good sports franchise we'll have here in Ottawa. So it's for sure an interesting time. And yeah, I mean, for a graphic designer that's main interest is in sports, it's, you know, there's a couple of good opportunities out there.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. So let's get back to the basics here. So you're a Senators fan from day one. What prompted you to design a concept jersey in the first place?
Well, as a graphic designer, I'm obviously very critical of anything visual. And being a Senators fan, anything visual that has to do with the team, whether it's marketing campaigns that I see or, most importantly, the product that hits the ice. So after the Reebok Edge jerseys were introduced, I noticed the most interesting thing I noticed on those jerseys were the introduction of the new O shoulder patch. Which I knew was a reference to the old Ottawa Senators. So I was pretty intrigued by that and was just wondering what a jersey with that as the main mark would look like. So I went about creating something in design, like a pretty basic vector sort of jersey. The point was just to give myself an idea of what a jersey like that would look like. And from there, the story sort of take a life of its own and grows into something else. But the idea was to just give myself an idea, like I said, what a retro jersey with the O mark would look like for the Ottawa Senators.
I remember when they revealed the Sens jersey, just the black jersey with the four letter S-E-N-S. And yep. I believe at the time, that's kind of around the time when I saw your concept come on the internet, right? Where you started to heavily promote it and get behind that movement. I noticed like a number of like the HF boards commenters said, yeah, this jersey's awesome. We have to get behind this. And that's kind of where it spurred, right? Or am I wrong in that?
It started actually probably, I created the original design a year before the alternate jersey was introduced. Like I said, just to give myself an idea of what it would look like. And then when rumors started coming out of NHL franchises releasing alternate jerseys the following season in 2008, 2009, that's when I thought, for some reason, I thought that Ottawa would for sure was going to go with the with that as an alternate jersey because it was a part of their branding and on their current uniforms. So I guess it sort of, I started pushing harder for it when they came out with the jersey they came out with, just because I felt that wasn't the right, and this is personal, but I did feel it was the right direction to go, and I felt there was a stronger mark out there for the Ottawa Senators to capitalize on.
No, I absolutely agree with you. I'm sure you've heard every critique in the book of every jersey. I'm sure there's a fan for everyone, but I always felt it looked like a chocolate bar wrapper.
Yeah, I sort of share that feeling. To me, there was just an overload of typefaces on there, just lines going everywhere. It's not that it was a bad design. It was just very different of what we see from what we see in hockey, and most importantly, the more successful and timeless uniforms we've seen in hockey.
All right. Now, as being the envy of many graphic designers and aspiring branders out there, can you walk us through the behind the scenes of of how the jersey actually came into fruition? I guess starting with when the organization kind of became aware of it and picked up the story.
Sure. It was the first meeting was very, I think it was more of a feel out process for them trying to see where my head was at. What kind of person I was? Was I serious about this? At that point, keep in mind, they have no idea whether I'm a 12-year-old kid or or, you know, some kind of crazy guy just posting an idea online. So that was pretty much the first meeting. Nothing of substance was said whatsoever. But after that, once they saw that I was pretty serious about it, they put me in touch with Paul Kitchen, which is a hockey historian in Ottawa. And my Bible throughout this the design process. So from there, I went about, my original design was something I had done pretty quickly. So obviously there was more research to put into this. I wanted every element on the jersey to have a reason for being there. I think that's very important in good design. So I went about doing some research. I met with Paul Kitchen on a number of occasions. We'd go through hockey magazines, just looking at different jerseys, the ones that were more successful and, like I said, more timeless in hockey. Looked at the old uniforms that the Ottawa Senators wore back in the days, what visual elements could be taken from those uniforms and sort of modernized into this rendition of a heritage jersey. So I sort of took everything, took a look at everything and created a more refined version of my original design, which is what people had seen online in the first couple of years of the process. So created that, and then I presented it to the team. There was an explanation for every element that was on there. It was explained why it was present on the jersey, what it represented to the old franchises. So there was a lot of research behind it. So they really liked what I presented originally, the sort of refined version. So we went about creating two sets of prototypes with Reebok. They wanted to see, I was personally at that point, I was going for the pure white, wherever you saw white on the jersey, I was going for the pure white, but they wanted to see a version with the antique white as well. So we got those uniforms back, those prototypes, and took a look at them, and I was still pretty much pushing for the white. I think they were more going towards the vintage white. We did some TV tests because that's what shows us if the numbers are clear enough on camera for when games are being broadcast. So the players skate around on the ice, not the players, but someone skates around on the ice. Goes to the penalty box, goes to the player's bench just to make sure that everything can be caught well by the camera. But I think in looking at those TV tests, we all felt there was something missing. So I went about creating a shoulder patch. That was the idea, to add a shoulder patch to the jersey. And again, we all wanted to keep it sort of a... So looked at different visual elements that I had gathered through my research with Paul, and the strongest one that would fit best with the concept we felt was the shoulder patch, the World's Champs patch from 1927, 1928, or 26-27. That's places like this where I need Paul. So that was the one that stood out the most, just with the diagonal line going across and the red and the black. So I went about creating a shoulder patch. At first, it was just an Ottawa Senators English patch on both sides, but the marketing department mentioned that, and that's to their credit, mentioned that, you know, Ottawa is a bilingual city. There's Gatineau that's not that's right across the river as well, and that they wanted to represent, you know, both official languages in Canada and the city. So just designed a French version of the patch, and those were added on. Also, the collar, the original collar, was different from the first set of prototypes. So keeping in mind that this is a modern adaptation of an old jersey, we felt that the laces set was sort of the right fit for the design, and added something to it because it's only an O, but it holds a lot of history and everything, but we wanted to add a bit more of a modern touch. And as much as the laces are often sort of, it goes hand in hand with vintage designs, that wasn't something, laces weren't something that were present in the old Ottawa Senators uniforms. So that was sort of a modern touch that we added, and we got the third prototype from Reebok, and I think we all pretty much felt that we nailed it then.
Perfect. I'm really happy I brought in the little pamphlet I got with my jersey yesterday, because it has the information here about the shoulder patch. It's from 1926, 1927, commemorate the 1927 win, just for the fact geeks out there.
Jacob, was there ever a moment in this process, maybe not even yesterday, but just where you're like, Jesus, this is actually happening. Like, I can't believe this is actually coming to fruition. Like, what was that, like, kind of moment where you just stopped to pause and think, like, Jesus?
I think, you know, there's a few people who've asked me that question since yesterday, and people often go back to the photo shoot with Daniel Alfredson, was like, okay, is that when it hit you that, you know, he was wearing your jersey and everything? And don't get me wrong, I'm a huge, huge Daniel Alfredson fan, but my focus was on getting the uniform right. I had seen the socks prior to the photo shoot, and the bands on the socks were too thin for my liking. So as soon as I walked into the room, I asked that that Reebok send a new set of socks with thicker stripes, sort of the same thickness that are on the armbands. So as soon as I walked in that photo shoot, I didn't even look at my favorite player in front of me. I just looked straight at the socks to make sure that they were all right. And once I saw that the uniform was complete and you know, perfect in my eyes, that's when I sort of sat back and I was like, wow, you know, favorite player growing up too, like was wearing the uniform I had designed. So that was pretty cool. But another moment was when I first got, there was 2 years of working to get the team to get in touch with me. So when they first contacted me, I think that was, one of the most exciting moments in the whole process.
All right. Now, one of our good friends is a huge font guy, and he would kill me if I didn't ask you what your inspiration was for the font, for the numbers, and for the lettering on the back of the jersey.
Okay, that's an interesting question. For the fonts, we all felt that going with a traditional block style lettering would be best. So the typeface used is not something that you could find and download or purchase. It's a custom typeface. This is something that Reebok sent us. I think it was 3 or 5 different options of typefaces to be used. And I sort of went through them and picked the one that I preferred to have introduced on the jersey. But it's not a specific typeface that's out there for people to use.
Our same friend actually mentioned on our website when Tim posted the photo diary of the jersey itself, he noticed that the font on the back for the nameplate didn't have the red and the black trim, I believe.
Yeah, on the outline.
On the outline, as opposed to the numbers. Is there a reason for that in particular?
I think that for myself, the nameplates always look crisper with just a solid color on the back. I understand the question he asked you, because it would make for a more cohesive look with the outlines around the names. But at the same time, it would have made the spacing between the letters it would have been a bit wider. It's something that's more legible on TV. But one thing I wanted that I don't think was on the jerseys yesterday, but I think they're supposed, if you look at the box that the jerseys came in yesterday, there's supposed to be a red outline around the A and the C on the jerseys. I don't know what the plan is for that. But it was more of a functional, decision, other than design. So.
All right. And, one of our other readers actually had a great, take on this, and he said that these jerseys looked like the type of jersey that were meant to have customization on the back. Mine's still blank at the moment. What do you think about that? Do you think that they work either way?
Yeah, I think they work either way. I was looking at not only sports branding in the couple of years I was doing research, but others, not only hockey branding, sorry, but other sports. And I think some of the most timeless designs are basic, very striking and logos that have a strong visual impact. So I think the O is definitely a strong mark. And looking at the marriage of the O with the stripes going across, it just makes for a strong branding element. I feel that the jersey works by itself as a standalone piece. Of course, that being said, all the jerseys I'll be getting will be customized because I'm just a fan of the team and want the players on there. But I think for any casual fan that's not looking to get them customized, it works just as well.
Tim and I were talking about this before the show, and we've always kind of liked the first jerseys from like the 92 to like 95 era from the Senators.
Yeah.
And you've designed this jersey that's beautiful, gorgeous. The fans seem to love it. And we're wondering, where does the organization go from here? Do you think they will go back to the original jerseys at some point? Or where do you see the organization going from here?
Well, it's an interesting question. I don't know what their plans are as far as uniforms. I was lucky enough to be able to work on one, so I can't speak for them, but I can speak for myself. And as a young franchise, you'll notice teams go through different sets of uniforms and logos. For example, if you look at the Montreal Canadiens, yes, they have this sort of iconic jersey and logo that seems like it's never changed and it's set in stone. But before they got to that, just take a look at their 100th anniversary season. They were able to break out like all sorts of uniforms for that season to sort of celebrate their past. So they went through the same process that the modern Ottawa Senators are going through right now. Now, as for your question, you're pretty much asking me if I think they nailed it the first time around. I think they weren't far. I think it was a very strong uniform, and with the sort of, I personally am a fan of the Reebok Edge template, and I think introducing that on the Edge template would make for a terrific set of uniforms, and if you include the Heritage jersey in there, it would make for one of the best sets in the NHL, and I'm not just saying this as a fan, but as a designer. Now, what their position is on that, I have, you know, no idea. But I certainly hope they go back to that. I was a big fan of those uniforms, and still from time to time I'll take a look on Kijiji or eBay, see if I can find one and try to get my hands on one.
Now, I'm sure this is going to be a bit of a brick wall question here, but there's a lot of fans, I'm sure I'm not the only one here, hoping, with my fingers crossed, that you will work with the organization again. Do you have any plans to work with the organization in the future?
No, there's nothing, there's been no discussion like that whatsoever. If you take a look at my company's Facebook page, you'll see though that there's, well, it's not up right now, but I was lucky enough not to to not only work on the Ottawa Senators, the uniform, but Jeff Kyle, the vice president of marketing over there, also trusted me enough to create the look for sort of the look and feel and artistic direction for this season. So just so we're clear, I didn't create the 20th anniversary logo or the Hockey Makes Us, but all the image treatment, the way there's those sort of sepia-toned images in the background, that sort of beige paper going across diagonally. So the look and feel for the season, he trusted me enough to present a design for that, and I was lucky enough to nail it. So I did a few more things with them, but as for future plans, there's nothing in place at the moment. I certainly hope so, but there's been no discussion about that whatsoever.
All right, Jacob, before we let you go, we're going to get into a little quick hit section with you. Just give us the first quick thing that comes to mind when we ask you these questions.
Okay.
Question number one. Ugliest jersey in hockey?
Ugliest jersey in hockey, I would probably have to say Nashville Predators.
Best logo in professional sports?
I'm torn between the Yankees and the Red Sox, but I'm a Sox fan, so I'll say Boston Red Sox.
A man after my own heart. My brother's in the studio listening in today, too, and he's nodding his head in approval.
All right.
Did you get your Heritage sweater personalized? If so, who was it?
The first one I got was Chris Phillips.
Were you ever approached by Corey Clouston to design him a new suit?
No, I have not been. Nice.
give us one word to describe your emotions yesterday.
Ecstatic.
Your favorite Ottawa Senators jersey of all time?
I think the original white sweater and the one they wore to the Stanley Cup Finals, that would be my favorite.
All right, Jacob, I really appreciate you coming on the show today. One last thing before you go, what else do you have coming up in the future?
I'm, like I said, trying to get more into sports design. I don't know if it's going to materialize into anything, but that's pretty much the plan right now. We'll see where it leads me, and again, focusing on my my graphic design agency.
Awesome. Well, Jacob, thanks for taking the time on the weekend to talk to us, and congratulations again on a fantastic design.
All right. Thank you very much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Hey, take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye.